Welcome back to the Daily Optimizer. I'm your biohacker mentor, and today we're opening with a finding that reframes one of the most talked about drug classes of the decade, not as a weight loss tool, but as a longevity signal. New data cited by researchers analyzing semaglutide and tirzepatide trial results suggests that GLP-1 receptor agonists produce epigenetically meaningful effects that are entirely distinct from and additive to caloric restriction alone. That's the mechanistic headline. But here's the performance metric that puts it in context. Participants tracked using the Dunedin PACE epigenetic clock, which measures the rate at which you're aging right now, not a static biological age estimate, showed measurable deceleration from caloric restriction alone in the landmark calorie trial. GLP-1 agonists appear to add a second independent lane to that same outcome. Two pathways, compounding. That's additive biology in action. And it's the through line for everything we're covering today. Let's go deep on GLP-1 first, because the mechanism here is almost universally misunderstood. Functional medicine clinician Monique Glass said it plainly on the IFM Pathways to Well-Being podcast. Weight loss is the most uninteresting part of these medications, and Dr. David Sinclair at Harvard Medical School echoes that framing, describing obesity itself as the single biggest accelerant of biological aging. So when we talk about metabolic normalization, we're not talking about aesthetics, we're talking about rate of aging intervention.
Here's what the mechanism stack actually looks like. GLP-1 is produced by L cells in your gut in response to food, and it follows a circadian rhythm. According to Glass, endogenous GLP-1 is highest in the morning and lowest at night. That single data point has a direct protocol implication. The same carbohydrate load is metabolically processed more efficiently at breakfast than at 8 p.m. This isn't opinion, it's receptor kinetics. Pharmaceutical GLP-1 analogs override that rhythm entirely, maintaining chronic receptor activation around the clock. That's their therapeutic edge, but it's also their liability. Glass explains that chronic elevation conditions your gut L cells toward deconditioning, meaning if you stop abruptly, you get a voracious rebound appetite as those cells struggle to pick up the slack. That's the mechanistic basis for why a taper protocol is non-negotiable, not optional. Building on that, Glass also highlighted something that doesn't require a prescription. Every muscle contraction brings GLUT4 glucose transporters to the cell surface. And research she cited on the IFM podcast shows that 2 minutes of movement per hour produces a 26% increase in glucose disposal. A 10-minute walk after each meal leverages the insulin-mediated clearance window without requiring any gym access whatsoever. That's a free metabolic intervention available right now. Now, for those bridging off pharmaceutical GLP-1 or looking to stimulate endogenous production, there's a botanical finding worth paying close attention to.
The New Zealand government funded a $30 million research initiative to identify plant compounds capable of producing biologically meaningful GLP-1 stimulation. Researcher Ed Walker mapped bitter taste receptor distribution throughout the entire GI tract, not just the tongue, and identified a hops derivative as the key compound. The protocol here is 250 milligrams of this hops derivative, taken 1 hour before your historically most problematic eating window. For most people, that's the late night snacking window. The mechanism works through bitter taste receptors distributed across the GI tract, activating L cell differentiation and triggering endogenous GLP-1 release. In human clinical trials cited by Glass, this produced a six-fold elevation above baseline GLP-1, roughly 3 times above what a normal meal produces, with an effect window of approximately 4 hours and an 18% reduction in caloric intake. This doesn't replicate the pharmaceutical's magnitude. It's a bridge tool during the taper phase, not a replacement. One critical safety signal before we move on. Dr. Sinclair flagged on the Peter Diamandis podcast an increasing rate of GLP-1-associated AIN, non-arteriate anterior ischemic optic neuropathy, which is effectively an optic nerve stroke. He estimates 20,000 to 30,000 U.S. cases per year are now being attributed to GLP-1 use. Causality isn't fully established, but the stopping criterion is unambiguous. Any sudden vision change while on a GLP-1 agonist requires immediate medical evaluation.
Full stop. And finally, on GLP-1, both Glass and the Ben Greenfield Life researcher explicitly warn that high-dose GLP-1 without resistance training is swapping obesity for sarcopenia. The researcher's exact framing: you could have an incredibly low Dunedin pace and then fall and get a hip fracture. Muscle mass monitoring via bioelectrical impedance Wadensa is mandatory throughout the entire protocol arc. Let's move to measurement, because what you track determines what you optimize. Dunedin pace, available commercially through True Diagnostic and Elysium, is the primary outcome metric for longevity interventions right now. Retest at 3 to 6 month intervals after any major protocol change. That's your biological feedback loop. Dr. Sunil Dond identified 5 physician-validated biomarkers that consistently distinguish healthy aging trajectories. Think of these as your baseline performance dashboard. Vitamin D, not the minimum of 20 to 30 nanograms per milliliter that prevents deficiency, but the optimizer target of 40 to 60. Triglycerides below 100 milligrams per deciliter, not just below 150. Sodium trending stable, and importantly, do not self-correct low sodium with dietary salt increases without clinical investigation, because in aging adults it's often dilutional or hormonal. CRP as low as achievable, and albumin above 4.0 grams per deciliter, which is a proxy for protein status and tissue integrity. Building on that, Dr. Rena Malik, urologist and guest on Diary of a CEO, frames erectile function as a peripheral vascular readout that most men and most clinicians dramatically underuse.
ED precedes diagnosable cardiovascular disease by 3 to 5 years, and 14% of men with ED will have a heart attack within 7 years. The IIEF questionnaire, the International Index of Erectile Function, is the validated tracking tool. Baseline it now, retest at 8 weeks and 12 weeks of protocol. And Malik's data point on exercise is striking. 150 minutes per week of moderate intensity cardio produces erectile function improvements equivalent pharmacologically to Viagra. The delta in that comparison is the whole argument for exercise as primary intervention. Neck circumference is another underused readout. 17 inches or above in men, 16 inches or above in women. That high probability of sleep apnea requiring formal evaluation. One structural measurement, 2 major health signals. Now let's talk about notokinase, because Dr. Sinclair's specificity here is worth your full attention. Notokinase is a proteolytic enzyme derived from natto, fermented soybeans, with fibrinolytic activity, meaning it enzymatically dissolves fibrin components of arterial plaque. On Peter Diamandis' podcast, Sinclair identified it as currently the only compound very clearly shown in large trials of over 1,000 participants, to reverse plaque in the body. The protocol here is 10,000 FU, fibrinolytic units, per day. Sinclair is explicit that 6,000 FU used in some trials did not show the same efficacy.
That dose distinction is not a rounding error. It appears mechanistically meaningful based on his direct reading of the trial data. The timeline is minimum 12 months of consistent use for measurable effect. Sinclair is tracking his own response via carotid IMT ultrasound, intima media thickness, at the 12-month mark, which he prefers over CT angiography given radiation concerns. Consistency is the rate-limiting variable, not the dose alone. He combines natokinase with aggressive LDL reduction, flagging PCSK9 inhibitors as superior to statins for plaque reversal potential, and an anti-inflammatory dietary protocol. The combination approach is his current best practice framing, not natokinase in isolation. Critical safety rail. Natokinase has blood-thinning activity. If you are on warfarin, direct oral anticoagulants, or antiplatelet agents, physician consultation before adding natokinase is mandatory. Meaningful bleeding risk exists at that combination. Let's close with the fatigue triad, because Dr. Eric Berg's 14 subtype fatigue framework from his YouTube channel gives you a root cause diagnostic map most practitioners never offer, and three subtypes are both commonly missed and easily corrected. The first is magnesium deficiency. Magnesium is a cofactor in over 300 enzymatic reactions, including ATP synthesis. Your cells actually store ATP as an MgATP complex. Standard serum magnesium tests miss intracellular depletion, so request RBC magnesium, targeting 5.2 to 6.5 mg per deciliter. Berg estimates 50 to 80% of the population is subclinically deficient.
The protocol here is magnesium glycinate. 300 to 400 milligrams of elemental magnesium before bed. Glycinate specifically for superior absorption, minimal GI upset, and the added calming effect of glycine. Sleep and muscle cramp improvements typically emerge within 1 to 2 weeks. The second is thiamine, or B1, deficiency. B1 is essential for pyruvate dehydrogenase, the enzyme that converts pyruvate to acetyl-CoA for Krebs cycle entry. Without adequate B1, carbohydrate fuel cannot efficiently convert to ATP and shunts toward lactic acid instead. High carbohydrate diets actively deplete B1. The protocol here is allothiamine, the fat-soluble thiamine form derived from garlic, at 50 to 100 mg per day for superior CNS penetration versus standard thiamine HCl. Concurrent reduction in refined carbohydrates is the primary co-intervention. The third is electrolyte depletion. The sodium-potassium ATPase pump generates the electrochemical voltage powering every nerve signal and muscle contraction in your body. The RDA for potassium is 4,700 mg per day, nearly impossible to hit without deliberate strategy. Avocados at roughly 975 mg each, beet greens and Swiss chard are your highest yield food sources. For anyone adapting to ketogenic eating, liberal sea salt addition during the first 2 to 4 weeks of carbohydrate restriction is non-optional, not a preference. Stack all three of these with a 10-minute post-meal walk for GLUT4-mediated glucose disposal and protect your sleep aggressively.
Dr. Malik cited data showing that 5 hours versus 8 hours of sleep drops testosterone by 15% within a single week, the hormonal equivalent of 10 years of aging. That's not a rounding error either. Your N of 1 experiment for this week, track your morning erection frequency as a vascular readout baseline, log your post-meal walk minutes, and pull your RBC magnesium on your next lab draw. 3 data points, 1 week, and you'll have a cleaner picture of your mitochondrial and vascular status than most annual physicals provide. That's your performance intelligence briefing for today. Thanks for spending this time with me. This work matters, and your biology is listening. Come back tomorrow for the next signal. Optimize your day. Talk tomorrow.